It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sea lampreys wreaked havoc on the Great Lakes in the 1940s. The invasive species feeds on fish, including trout, whitefish, ciscos, and walleye, put a huge dent in fishing in Great Lakes waterways.
People in the fishing business said that the lake's tributaries were filled with so many lampreys that the water looked like spaghetti. But in the 1950s, the U.S. created the Great Lakes Fishery Commission, which helped control their numbers.
The effort against sea lampreys faced staff and funding cuts earlier this year. While some funding was restored, there are substantial cuts for research still on the way.
Katie Thornton is a Peabody Award-winning print and audio journalist based in Minnesota. She recently wrote an article for The New Yorker about the invasive sea lamprey and the efforts to control it. Her article is titled, "The Feds Who Kill Blood-Sucking Parasites." Katie, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, the sea lamprey, invasive in the Great Lakes, sometimes called the vampire fish. Give us a sense a little bit what it looks like and what it's doing to its prey in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen a sea lamprey, you know that they're kind of something out of a horror movie. Mm-hmm. They're these long, sort of snaking, eel-like fish, and then they have this jawless sucker mouth at the end. They have over 100 razor-sharp teeth in that little mouth, kind of in these concentric circles. And then they have this sawing tongue that comes up from their throat. They latch on to healthy fish, the sides of healthy fish, with this sucker mouth. And then the tongue comes up from the throat, slices up the flesh of the host fish, and they drain the fish of their blood and bodily fluids. They're incredibly deadly to Great Lakes fish. And in previous decades, they nearly tanked the fishing economy in the Great Lakes.
And before we dig into that, these are creepy looking, yet in your reporting, you had a firsthand experience with one where you let it kind of latch onto you. They don't eat people, but what was that like?
Yeah, firsthand, quite literally, I let one latch onto the palm of my hand. You know, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Minneapolis. I've been sort of passingly familiar with lampreys for quite a while. I've seen them in the aquariums, things like this, and they all have this sort of like repulsive yet attractive quality, like you just kind of can't look away. Never in my life did I imagine I would sort of let one latch onto me. You're right that lampreys don't feed on humans. They don't really have any use for our warm blood, but they will sort of latch onto anything. Like, this is how they often get around the Great Lakes, for example. It's like they latch onto the bottom of a boat and they go where it takes them. And I figured for the plot, for the story, I had to let one latch onto my hand. And even though it didn't bite me, because it has no need to bite me, certainly, like, the suction is so powerful. It's about four times as powerful as a normal vacuum cleaner. So certainly those teeth were getting in the way, and it left a pretty serious mark.
But no serious harm done to you. But when these sea lampreys made their way, as we started building canals and things like that, from their ocean habitat up into the Great Lakes, they did some serious harm. Give us a sense of the ecological and economic impact that they had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's estimated that only 1 in 7 fish in the Great Lakes who's attacked by a lamprey actually survive. So these lamprey attacks are really, really deadly. And as you just said, this had a massive ecological and economic impact. Sea lampreys could be found in all 5 of the Great Lakes by the end of the 1930s. And within a couple decades of being in the Great Lakes, they were doing massive damage to the ecosystem and to the fishing industry. Fishing is, of course, a major, major industry in the Great Lakes. Between subsistence fishing and commercial fishing, tribal fishing, recreational fishing, this is a massive industry. And in the 1940s, trout harvests were brought down by 98%. I mean, this is a huge economic impact. People were going hungry. People were losing their jobs. There were anglers who were pleading to Congress to do something about this problem. And it was a massive undertaking to be able to start to root out this fish.
Trout and a lot of other species, walleye, sturgeon, they'll target catfish. You name it, they go after it,
yeah.
It sounds like. But there's a success story, though, that you tell. People in so many of these communities were looking for help. And we found some. What led to some of the successful efforts against these sea lampreys in Great Lakes waterways?
Yeah, this has been considered one of the most successful invasive species control efforts ever. In the mid-century, there was a lot of public funding that went into trying to find a solution to this problem. A lot of research was being done specifically around chemical controls. There was also some research into things like dams and electric dams, but they really wanted to find a chemical that would kill the lamprey, stop it from reproducing, and kill those that were already sort of entering their parasitic phase without harming the rest of the ecosystem. And there is a lab up in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan where a lot of this research was taking place. And after years and years, over 5 years, and over 5,000 attempts at different chemical combinations, the researchers found a chemical that killed the lamprey without harming the native fish. And within a couple of years, they were deploying it in the tributaries into the Great Lakes. And within a couple of decades, the fishery had come roaring back to life. So it was really that public investment in science and research that was able to get people back to work and get the fishing economy and the ecosystem stabilized.
Now, good news, that worked. As you say, it brought the fish back. Bad news, it doesn't take long to reverse that, it sounds like. We're going to get into 2025, but we had a trial run, you write, during COVID when some of these efforts were hindered. What happened?
Absolutely. This was really it was described to me as the forbidden experiment by some of the scientists. You know, everybody sort of wondered, like, we've been doing such a good job controlling these lampreys. Could we let our foot off the gas a little bit? That is a really dangerous experiment to conduct when you're out in the wild and people's livelihoods are at stake. But COVID sort of forced that experiment onto this region. Because of travel restrictions and other issues, there just wasn't as much treatment in 2020 and 2021. And the lampreys came roaring back to life. In one of the lakes, treatments were halted altogether for 1 year, 2020. And the lamprey wounding went up tenfold in just a year without treatment. So this really, really is an issue that, you know, without continued treatment, is going to prove to be a big, big challenge very quickly.
You rode along with some of the people doing this kind of work in Michigan, in this case. This is happening all over the Great Lakes region, I understand. Give us a sense of what this work is like and who is doing it, these anti-sea lamprey efforts.
Yeah. So this is it's sort of a combination of public workers. There is a group that is not a direct public agency, but rather a nonprofit, a treaty organization between the U.S. and Canada called the Great Lakes Fishery Commission. And this group works with public employees in both the U.S. and Canada, both to research how to best control sea lampreys, but also to do the concrete work of getting out there every year and treating these waters. Rather than treating the open waters of the Great Lakes, they'll actually treat the tributaries. Sea lampreys spawn in tributaries. They spend multiple years of their life before they're filter feeders for many years. And so they don't need to be feeding on fish for the first couple of years of their life. And so they're living in these little streams before they transform into parasites and swim out to the open waters of the lakes and go hunt for fish. And so the treatment happens in the tributaries. The treatment happens in the streams, which is really fortunate that that's how their life cycle goes, because it's really, you know, you can't exactly dump this lampricide into the open water of the lakes and assume it'll be in the right concentration. It's a lot to coordinate in the streams. You know, they have to figure out where the sea lampreys are first, where they've infested, and then sort of deploy the chemical at very specific times at different parts of the streams, you know, so that the lampreys can't avoid getting hit by the lampricide. I kind of think of it as like a Pac-Man game. You kind of have to make sure you trap the lampreys from all directions with this lampricide. And again, it has really minimal effects on the rest of the ecosystem. It's not dangerous. You know, all these other fish are left happily swimming. But folks will get out there and use spreader hoses and pump around the clock, pump this pesticide into the water. In order to kill the lampreys, they have to be exposed for 9 consistent hours. So it usually means running this toxin into the water, monitoring the concentrations downstream to make sure that it's not too much, but it's not too little, and usually doing that for about 12 to 14 hours just to accommodate for any changes that might come in, agricultural runoff, rain, beaver dams, things like this. There's a lot of moving parts.
We are talking about the invasive sea lamprey, which nearly decimated the fishing industry on the Great Lakes. Katie Thornton is with us, journalist, recently wrote the article for The New Yorker headlined "The Feds Who Kill Blood-Sucking Parasites." Katie, again, the success story, dialing back the numbers of sea lampreys in the water. Now, here we are in 2025. A lot of the funding, it sounds like, is coming from the U.S. federal government. Well, there's been a lot happening with funding from the U.S. federal government. What kind of things are you seeing that have impacted and then could impact these anti-sea lamprey efforts?
Yeah, it's a really big year in the lamprey control program, certainly. It began with a bang in February. Like many public programs, they got hit with these massive DOGE-related cuts. Due to the government-wide hiring freeze, they weren't able to hire their seasonal workers. And the seasonal workers are really sort of the lifeblood of the lamprey control program. They're the folks who are getting out there every year and treating these streams and making sure that these fish get killed before they can go out and kill plenty more fish in the open waters of the lakes. There was also probationary employees, folks who were employed year-round but who had maybe changed jobs in recent years and were still in that sort of probationary period. Those folks were fired due to all of these cuts. And it was a massive upheaval, as it was in a lot of these federal programs. The lamprey program was actually able to argue back a lot of their staffing. And so they were able to staff up fully at the early part of the field season. There were delays. There were things that were not completed, sort of assessment work that is really important, ironically, long-term to efficiency. But the crews were able to get out into the streams and treat for the lampreys. However, there's definitely some uncertainty moving forward. You know, the treatment program itself is funded for next year. They should be able to get out into the streams and kill the lampreys. However, the research is really, really up in the air. Ongoing research is so important to this project. You know, as we talked about, the reason for this success story is because there was government-funded research. But with any success story, with any invasive species success story that relies on a pesticide, there's always a concern of the target sort of building up resistance to that pesticide. And there's a little bit of evidence that that might be starting to happen with the lampreys. If the lampreys become more immune to the pesticide, it will be a massive, massive change. And so researchers have been working to find other ways to control the population.
But what kind of programs had people been working on as alternatives? If, in fact, that anti-lamprey pesticide doesn't work anymore, what are some of the other alternatives that researchers were at least digging into?
Yeah, there are many, and there are some that are being deployed now. So they're being tested in the field as well as in the labs, depending on the stage of the research. There are electric dams, you know, some dams that send simply electrical currents through the water that can basically prevent lampreys from entering certain streams in the first place. They're also using pheromones to attract lampreys to certain areas to be able to trap them, something called necromones, which was described to me as a dead ground-up lamprey, which is pretty foul a scene to think of. But the sort of smell of death really repels these creatures, and you can use that to sort of, again, steer them away from an area that you don't want them. That's all being tested. There's also some research being done into how to use AI in new dams to allow certain fish to pass through and keep other fish like lampreys out of certain waters. There's a lot of incredible, incredible research being done. But recently it was announced that the Trump administration has proposed a 79% cut to the Great Lakes Science Center, which is where a lot of this science is funded through. And so there's a big question mark about what the future is for this research.
And you point out in your article, you were working in a part of Michigan that was a bit more Republican-leaning, more pro-Trump by most indications. But when it came to lampreys, it didn't seem like there was a Republican or a Democratic position. There was a lot of support for these anti-sea lamprey efforts. What kind of things did you hear and see in the communities?
Absolutely. You know, people, this is a widely supported program. And I think when you really dive into a lot of public programs, they do have a lot of support because they benefit a lot of people sort of across party and across class. The people who I spoke with were very overwhelmingly positive about the sea lamprey control program. You know, the damage that the lampreys did is close enough in our sort of collective memory that I think people still understand just how bad the problem was before it got controlled. You know, people say, Oh, yeah. My grandpa would tell me about when the streams would run like spaghetti with lampreys. Or, you know, my uncle would tell me stories of reeling fish in with lampreys dangling from their sides. And you still see that a bit these days, but significantly, significantly less. So people are familiar with the damage that they've done, that they can do, that they might do again. And so the program is very, very well supported. I think what's challenging is that there are plenty of other very vital programs out there controlling other invasive species that don't have quite the same sort of familiarity. They don't have the same sort of repulsive enemy that really unites people and helps people to rally around a program like the Lamprey Control Program. But there are so many vital efforts that are getting called into question this year with these public funding cuts that might not have as much sort of as compelling of a story as the Lamprey program, but that are just as important to the survival of the industry and of the ecosystem.
Well, and you point out in your article that in the case of sea lampreys and probably some of the other things you're referencing there, they're victims of their own success in some ways. The problem is so well controlled that people forget that we're actively doing things to control that problem.
That's right. I think, you know, when success really is a double-edged sword, you know, if nobody's heard of the Lamprey program because it's so successful, or nobody's heard of other programs because they're successful, it's easy to say, oh, what's this? This is just an unnecessary line item in our budget. Let's slash it. And so I think that it's really important that folks are out sort of telling the stories of the work that they do and making visible the work that they're doing. That's something that I think the Great Lakes Fishery Commission does really well. You know, they're out at county fairs and state fairs bringing lampreys around. You know, the reason I was able to have a lamprey attach onto my hand in Michigan and the hotel parking lot was because one of the communications folks from the Great Lakes Fishery Commission always has an igloo cooler full of them in the back of his truck so that if there's an opportunity to educate people passing by, he can do so. I saw it happen at one of the treatment sites. You know, somebody was wondering what's going on when they saw the spreader hose going across the stream and saw the lampreyside being pumped into the water. And somebody from the Great Lakes Fishery Commission was able to give them a demonstration right there. You know, here's a lamprey. Here's what they do. Here's its mouth. Here's its tongue. And I think that visibility is really important to help us understand why we fund programs like this.
So with the sea lamprey story in particular, what's the next thing to watch out for? You mentioned there's funding at least for the treatment for next year, but on into the future, what is going to make or break the effort to control sea lampreys in our Great Lakes waterways?
I think you need ongoing research. You know, most importantly, of course, you have to get out into the streams, you have to treat. And so I think everybody is feeling very grateful that there is funding for the future treatment program, at least for next year. But you really, really need to have this research long term. This has been a problem for a long time. It's been very well controlled for a long time, thanks to publicly supported research. We need to continue that or, you know, the wheel's going to come off in our hands again, as it did in the past.
Katie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for talking about lampreys with me.
That's journalist Katie Thornton talking about her latest piece for The New Yorker titled "The Feds Who Kill Blood-Sucking Parasites." It tracks the history of invasive sea lampreys in the Great Lakes and connected waterways and the ongoing efforts to contain them.